ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, chapter entitled Krishna Meets Inhabitants of Vrindavan, chapter number 82, text number 47. Shri Shukha Uvacha. Adhyatma Shikhaya Gopya. Evam Krishnena Shikshitah Tadunu Smarana Dvashta Jiva Koshastam Adhyagam. Sri Shukha Uvacha. Adhyatma Shikshaya Gopya. Evam Krishnena Shikshitah Tadanusmarana Dvasta Jivakoshastam Adhyagam. Sri Sukha Uvacha. Adhyatma Shikshaya Gopya. Evam Krishnena Shikshitah Tadanusmarana Dvasta Jiva Koshastam Adhyagan. Krishnena Shikshitah Anusmarana Dvashta Jiva Koshastam Agyagam. Sri Sukha Uvacha. Adhyatma Shikshaya Gopya Evam Krishnena Shikshitah Tad Anusmarana Dvashta Jiva Koshastam Agyagam. Ladies, Sri Shukha Uvacha. Adhyatma Shikshaya Gopya Na Shikshitaha Tad Anusmarana Dvastya Jiva Koshastam Agyagam. Sri Shukha Uvacha. Shukdev Goswami said, Adhyatma, about the soul, Sikshaya, with instruction, Gopya, the gopis, Evam, thus, Krishnena, by Krishna, Sikshitaha, taught, Tat, on him, Anusmarana, by constant meditation, Dvashta, eradicated, Jiva Koshaha, subtle covering of the soul, false ego, Tam, him, Adhyagan, they came to understand. Purport and translation purported by the Sabda Srila Prabhupada. Shukdev Goswami said, having thus been instructed by Krishna in spiritual matters, the gopis were free from all tinges of false ego because of their incessant meditation upon him. And with their deepening absorption in him, they came to understand him fully. Purport. Srila Prabhupada renders this passage as follows in Krishna. Quote, the gopis, having been instructed by Krishna in this philosophy of simultaneous oneness and difference, remained always in Krishna consciousness and thus became liberated from all material contamination. The consciousness of the living entity who falsely presents himself as the enjoyer of the material world is called Jiva Kosha, which means imprisonment by the false ego. Not only the gopis, but anyone who follows these instructions of Krishna becomes immediately freed from the Jiva Kosha imprisonment. A person in full Krishna consciousness is always liberated from the false egoism. He utilizes everything for Krishna's service and is not at any time separated from Him.
Om Agyanati Mirandhasya Gnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahiyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Shahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakhan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrinda Vaneshwari Prishabhanu Shute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpataru Bhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhya Evacha Patitanam Pavane Bhyo Vaishnave Bhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhunityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Shukdeva Goswami said, having thus been instructed by Krishna in spiritual matters, the gopis were freed from all tinges of false ego because of their incessant meditation upon Him. And with their deepening absorption in Him, they came to understand Him fully. Hare Krishna. So it's a very special day for us today, the day of Bhim Nirjala Ekadashi. Of course, right now, all over the world, there are millions of people doing this fast. There are about at least more than a million people, maybe a billion people doing this today. All our Muslim friends are doing that. They're doing their roza for almost a month. So we are not doing anything very unique and special. But yet, for devotees, it is a special day. A philosophy is chanting, dancing and feasting, but for one day it becomes chanting, dancing and fasting. So it's a small change for just for one day. And I guess all of us can go through it very easily. Because we have better reasons to fast than many others. Most people, I heard, they fast because they want to reduce their weight. Many patients come and said, "Doctor, we were fasting, you know, pata nahi jo hua nahi hoga, pata nahi, whatever merits are there, we don't know. At least we'll reduce some weight." So fasting has come to degenerate into a weight reducing technique for most people, which is a very, very inferior motivation for fasting. Vaishnavas do the same thing, they also fast. Or rather, we also do the same sometimes rituals that other people will do it. But in Vaishnavism, the activity remains the same. We also chant God's name like others do, right? But the motivations which actually drives us to do those things are far, far, far higher, or maybe far, far, far deeper, right? Because we do this fast to deepen our appreciation for Krishna consciousness. We want to use this day exclusively today and for any other holy day. Madhavatithi Bhakati Janani. This is the Janani day. It is a day with gives birth. These are called motherly days in one sense. Like mothers give birth to children. So also these holy days give birth to Krishna in the heart. Therefore they call as Bhakti Janani. Mothers which generate the children of bhakti in the hearts of those who do it properly. Therefore, it will give us a day today to refrain from those things our mind are always hankering to do. To drink water, to eat food, not just food, tasty food. The wife will always ask the husband in the morning, "Aaj kya khana hai?" And the husband will place a menu and say, "Okay, today you make this dal or that, make some samosas." Right? It's a pretty much common dialogue in every household. Aaj kya khana hai? But today we want to really meditate on the true nature of the soul's actual needs, different from the needs of the body. We want to remind ourselves that we are ultimately not these bodies. Even though we have heard it a million times and more, we have to hear it even more, a million times more, to one day understand that this, and this hankering for the six whips which affect the body and the mind, the primary being thirst and hunger, sleep, these are whips. And truly, Prabhupada has even started his basic teachings from the Nectar of Instruction with this. The very first instruction is to control the tongue, right? It's basic level. It's a basic level to control our tongue. From a desire for... Raghunath Das Goswami asked, "What is my dharma as a sannyasi? Please tell me, I am supposed to be virakta, but I really don't know what my dharma is." He said, first he said, "Bhalo na khaive, bhalo na perive." But how many of us really follow that? Bhalo khaive, bhalo na khaive, bhalo khaive. We like to eat bhalo bhalo. Right? But today we will not allow our minds to deviate into that. Today we will want to dive deeply into fulfilling the hunger and the thirst of the soul, which is what actually we are. What is the soul hungry for? What is the soul really thirsty for? Right? Only by allowing our minds to be away from the constant hankering of breakfast, lunch, dinner, snack, and it just goes on. Then sometimes eating something in between, snacking in between. Keep it all aside. It's a day of meditation. There are various pastimes in our holy scriptures which we can remember, where devotees have fasted and have experienced this thirst. I'm reminded about the Pandavas. Some of the most intense thirst one can ever experience was experienced by the Pandavas. There's a story of how they were in the jungle. They were chasing a deer. Good lessons to learn from the story, therefore it's worth talking about. They were chasing a deer which was supposed to be disturbing in the fire sacrifice of a Brahmin. And as they chased this deer deep into the forest, they all became very thirsty. Very, very, very thirsty. Unusual amount of intense thirst. And then they were so exhausted, so dehydrated from all the running that they couldn't walk anymore, chase anymore. And they had to just sort of practically collapsed in that place and sat down and said, "Is there any some water here?" So Nakul went up the tree and saw that there is some reservoir of water a little bit in the distance, probably because there are some birds flying that area. So maybe there is a water reservoir there. So said, "Nakula, go and see." We know the story, how Nakula went to the pond and he was supposed to fetch water, but first he wanted to drink himself. And when he's drinking this water, this yaksha comes in. "So before you drink this water, you must answer my questions." And Nakula was a bit neglectful of that. Not out of disrespect, but because he was overcome by just a thirst which would otherwise probably kill him. So he just ended up neglecting that. He wanted to drink it. The moment he drank it, he died. Immediately died. Sahadev came in and he died. Bhimsen came, this powerful mace man, and he died. Of course, Arjuna came. They were so thirsty. They were just so thirsty. You cannot imagine this sort of thirst, right? And we do nirjal, but you know, it's not that next day we are going to die because of where is electoral water and where is like limu sharbat. You're not like that. This is like a million times more than that. And these are all great, you know, yogis themselves. They are not ordinary souls like us. They can undergo severe amount of tapasya and fierce disciplinary control over their senses and mind. They're not ordinary souls, but yet all these Pandavas, Arjuna himself was overcome. I said, "I couldn't care less about your questions. You know, let me first drink the water." He said, "You will die just like your brothers if you do not accept." He drank and he also died. Imagine, four Pandavas dead in no time. And Yudhishthira Maharaj was deeply concerned. I said, "What's happening? How is it my brothers have not returned? And something very, very strange." Of course, he goes there also. And imagine him, his situation. Yudhishthira comes in there and he sees his four powerful brothers just on the bank of the pond, dead. And they were more dear to him than his life. And he was so much in pain, he was practically mortified. He became paralyzed to see, "My brothers are dead. How am I going to answer Kunti now that all her children, Madhuri's children, are dead without even a fight?" And she would say, "What's happening here? There's not even a fight, there's not even a scar, there's not even a wound on the body. They're all dead. What happened? How can these powerful people who can defeat millions of soldiers in war die without a fight? It's so mysterious that they could just die like that. They were not breathing." But at that time, even before he could react to their sorrow and even cry, he couldn't even cry, it is said. But he had no tears to cry. He was so parched up. There was no molecule of water practically in his entire body. He couldn't even cry at the death of his dearmost brothers. And he's overcome by thirst. He said, "I will do the needful after, but let me first drink." And then this yaksha come again. "You will die like your brothers if you do not answer my questions." And Vishmara was a very, very wise man. Very extremely wise man. And here he proved himself as superior in terms of his level of maturity and his ability to really control himself than the Pandavas. Other Pandavas. He said, "Okay, I'll answer your questions. What are they?" So there are several questions which were asked. Someone said it was about 42 questions. I do not know. But I thought we'll discuss about two or three of them at least, which are relevant. He asked this question. Now we are discussing these questions today because we are going to be a little thirsty also. A little thirsty. Not very thirsty. I'm sure all of us will sit in some AC room and read some Bhagavatam or something. You know? You won't get so thirsty. Nobody will go in the sun deliberately today. But yet, while we are trying to control our thirst,
And these questions with a thirsty Paramahamsa Vaishnava was asked are useful to us. He said, what is wickedness? What is wickedness? So this Maharaj was always absolutely accurate on his answers. All questions were answered with absolute perfection as far as Niti Shastra, Dharma Shastra, Bhakti Shastra. You put any Shastra, they were all absolutely the best answer one can ever give. Said, actually fault finding with others is the worst wickedness. Fault finding is the worst type of wickedness of the heart. So, we need to really work on this aspect, how our heart sometimes gets captured by this very low quality, very base quality, very inferior part of our consciousness, which drives us to really find faults with others. Practically, it is almost impossible for a Vaishnava to grow in spiritual life, because fault finding has the power to nullify all merits of the bhakti practices. That's how powerful it is. Why does every activity performed in bhakti get destroyed? Because fault finding deeply hurts Krishna. It deeply hurts Krishna to see his devotees find fault with others. And even more so, if those people whom are being fault-finded are his devotees. If they are his devotees, they are the integral part of his life. They are like his. Krishna says, these devotees are mine. Right? So it's like if you beat Krishna, what would happen? Right? Who would beat Krishna? Even when we have a pin which may strike Krishna, you know, the devotees are extremely careful in the deity worship to not allow in a pin, because pins are part of the deity worship program, because you have to tie up cloth in this way and that way and this and that like that. But they're very careful to use the pin such a way that first it hits their skin. When they put there's a turban and they're putting the turban behind and they have to put a pin. It's a blind procedure because you're not seeing it. There's no CC camera there to see in the camera, like a person doing laparoscopic surgery or something. He puts a pin and it hits his finger first. So he knows, yes, it's in the right place. And then removes his finger and then puts it in the cloth. Right? So, he's very careful not to hurt even Krishna's deity. And if he hurts it by mistake, he feels the greatest pain in his life for having done this. So, how would we feel if you would hurt Krishna personally? But, devotees are Krishna's body. They are Krishna's body. They are his life. So when you hurt Krishna, it's actually injuring Krishna directly. So how painful to hurt Krishna like that. So it's something which we can work upon today. To abstain from this very, very diabolical quality of wickedness, which is fault-finding. Then the next question, maybe not the next question, but one of the questions which is connected to this is, where does sort of wickedness come from? So the question was, what becomes valuable, Yaksha asked, what becomes very valuable when it is given up? What becomes valuable when it is given up? Now generally something is valuable when we gain it, right? It's a gold, silver, diamonds. It becomes valuable as long as it is in the store with the shopkeeper. The gold and the silver and the diamonds and the rubies and sapphires, they are not valuable to us. But once you have them, then they become valuable to you, right? But the question here is, what becomes truly valuable when you give it up? Interesting question, right? But he was so sharp, he didn't have to really think. He was so sharp. You know, most of us think, And it's when you are like exhausted and thirsty, you can't practically think, your senses are all. But he has so much control over his consciousness that he could gather all his knowledge and immediately bring it out. This tomorrow is so powerful. so self-controlled. I said, that which becomes very valuable when given up is pride. When you give up pride, it becomes very, it gains value. But when you keep it, what happens when you keep pride with you? Right? You become a big loser. You can only become wealthy in your life when you actually give up this. The moment when you keep it with you, you're a poor man. When you give it up, become a wealthy man. So this wickedness question is connected to this. When do we find faults with others? When we actually are affected by pride. Right? So this is something also which is a deep concern. Especially with senior people, when they become senior in any organization or senior in any institution, or whether spiritual institution or material institution, the more senior you become in your hierarchy, you are far more vulnerable to this pride. And all of us are testimony for that. When we came into the Krishna consciousness movement first, we were not so much affected by pride at all. Right? We didn't know what is pride. We were like very innocent, childlike, just hanging around to senior devotees and trying to get the simple most service for them. They probably point, what can I do for you? You know, getting the shoes or getting a book Xerox for them, or you know, getting their fan repaired for them, or getting a notebook for them, or doing something for them, because we had so much respect for the devotees, and even the smallest thing they would give us, Prabhuji, okay, you would run and do that. It was very simple, nice, happy days in Krishna consciousness. Right? We were just doing the most menial things with great joy and gratitude. Wow, I'm just so happy that the Prabhuji gave me the service of Xeroxing his Bhakti Shastri book. So it's very nice. That's so nice. Right? But all of us are testimony to this fact. As practitioners, we all have to accept that as we are growing, we are more and more becoming conscious of this increasing anartha. Either it is increasing, is one possibility, definitely. Or second thing is, it is probably getting uprooted from coming from below and coming up. Like the Amrut Manthan process, in the ocean, the poison was already there. Right? Not that the poison came afterwards. But the process of Manthan, churning, allowed the poison to come up. So the bhakti school of devotees, they understand that rigorous sadhana does allow the poison of the heart to actually come to the surface. Right? So it may be that the pride has actually increased, or it may be it at least perceived more because it has come, which was there. Now when you're intoxicated state in material life, you don't even realize that this is there. But when you really start practicing and you do a little bit of Chetodarpana Marjanam, then this pride comes up. And then how do you handle this pride is very, very crucial. Because this pride, because it is poison, has the potential to kill you. This poison has the potential to actually destroy your Bhakti Lata Beach. So at this stage of spiritual growth, if the devotee is not conscious that this pride is, you know, going to be overwhelming into my consciousness, and he doesn't deal with it properly by removing this weed of pride which grows along with the weed of bhakti, it can actually choke the Bhakti Lata Beach completely. Right? And therefore many times in spiritual societies, the biggest damage is done by the people who are in senior positions. So it's a great word of caution for all practitioners as you all become senior in hierarchy and position and designation in services. Because you become more empowered, you become more talented. People who are not speaking English, and people who came to, you know, Krishna consciousness, who are not like coming from villages, you know, they didn't do anything of anything practically. When they come to Krishna consciousness, they learn reading Prabhupada's books, understand philosophy, they speak English, they trust traveling, they meet people, they can negotiate, they can go to, you know, for book distribution, they meet the CEOs of various companies, chairmen, they know how to talk. So they learn a lot of things. They start book distribution, so they can talk to people. So things which they never done before, but they really start becoming more and more, you know, talented, skilled, they get more of knowledge, they become more wiser. So many things happen. So as you start attributing those things to ourselves, right? I am doing all this, right? So, this pride comes in. Therefore, it is very useful to remember the story of Arjuna. Arjuna's story is a very classic story of how one can be always reminded. This story, there are some stories which you should always remember. Each anartha carries a particular story which is very instructive. We have 6 anarthas. And each story, there are several stories, but you know, for a sadhaka, it is important that he connects at least with each anartha 2 or 3 powerful stories from the scriptures, which actually immediately brings someone. He sees pride and he understands the negative effects of pride and how things happen. So you can remember the Shobari Muni story, or you can remember so many other stories which are there like that, how pride affects you. Right? Even if you're a powerful person like Shobari, but you get proud. You get proud and you become so proud that you have the pride to think that you have the right now to curse the carrier of God. He cursed Garuda. Now, which yogi would have, who would feel competent to think that I can curse the carrier of God himself? It's ridiculous, right? Doesn't make sense. But yes, that's what pride does. It does makes you think, makes us do things which are ridiculous. Like cursing, the fact that you curse, and you curse somebody who is as big as Garudji. He's right there, standing, folded hands. Who would think that I can curse Garud or Hanuman? it doesn't make sense, but he did that. And what he had to go through for that, right? He went through hellish life because of doing that. Right, so there are some powerful stories like that. But then, Arjuna's story is more sober because Arjuna actually tries to protect Krishna's queens. This is very much relevant here because after Krishna disappears from this world, then he actually goes to help his 16,000 queens and wants to bring them back from Dwarka to Indraprastha so that they are protected. Because women by nature always need protection. And since he's Krishna's closest friend, he felt obligated to do this on Krishna's behalf. As he's getting them from, all these people from Dwarka, he's attacked by Bhils. You know what is Bhils, right? There is a tribe called Bhils. They're like aborigines of our country. And they are trained to, fight wars and make handmade bows and arrows. They are hunting and more like nomadic people, travel from place to place, forest to forest. And they attack because they see a lot of wealth and they see a lot of women and who are carrying all of this, all decked up with so much royalty and opulence, so they attack, right? And Arjuna is, of course, nonchalantly just starts shooting arrows. He is just a few years back, he has defeated the Kauravas, so for him, it's easy to, these Bhils are like just nobody. But he finds that when he fights with them, he just actually loses. He loses. And what a shock for Arjuna. I mean, somebody who has, done something fantastic. Like somebody who has been in a boxing match and has beat up the biggest boxer, and a child comes and defeats him, a small child of 3 years, and boxes him on his face and he falls flat. He said, I could hit a heavyweight world champion, and here is a child of 3 years, he boxed me and he put me flat on the floor and said, 1, 2, 3, 4, 10, dead, okay, finished. The child says, I win. It's like that. It's impossible that Arjuna could ever be defeated by anybody. But it happened. And then he had to actually open his file again. He opened his file, his Bhagavad Gita file again. So what did Krishna tell me? What did he teach me? And he went to that again. He recounted all of Krishna's teachings. And then it dawned upon him that whatever skills I have or I had at that time were all emergency powers given to me by Krishna for a particular purpose to achieve on his behalf. And having gone back to the spiritual world and accomplished his Dharma Shastra Sthapna, right? Now those talents and skills are no more required. And therefore now this Gandiva bow, which was given by Lord Shiva, has become an ordinary bow. His arms, which could actually twang the pratyancha to such a level that it would shake the hearts of the warriors, cannot even make anybody scared. Right? And those arrows do not seem to penetrate anybody's heart. So this has become just an ordinary bow. What a powerful lesson Arjuna must have learned at that time. That he was simply used by Krishna as his wonderful instrument. And now the instrument has come back to its normal state. He's the ordinary man of this world. He's not the powerful Gandivdhari archer. He's a regular person of this world. A deep lesson to learn how we cannot attribute success, even in our Krishna consciousness, to ourselves. the success also which we have in Krishna consciousness is not because of us. It's because of divine empowerment of God. Divine empowerment of God's representatives and His dear servants. It is their blessings which are upon us. It is the connection which we have with Krishna and His devotees which actually empowers us to do various things. So this is something which is important to learn. And then of course the last lesson, we all have heard this many times, what is the most astonishing thing in this world? Right? So we need to get reminded that we are fasting now from food and water, but there will probably be a time in our life where at the time of death, many of us will go through a sickness which will deprive us of food and water. And most devotees in our society, they have done this. As they are approaching their final days, they just abstain voluntarily from food and water. Prabhupada himself did that. Right? So, it's a good training. Where we're just so addicted to even simple things like food and water, to just abstain for one day. But because we know that at the time of death, probably we'll have to say, if we all find in our lives that our body is ridden with disease which is incurable, then rather than having the, I'm speaking as a doctor, but still, you would probably tell the doctors that, do not put a million tubes in my body. One in the nose, one up there, one down there, and 50 things in my hands, and on the ventilator tube machine. Who wants to die a terrible death like that, right? They call it DNR. It's called in medical language DNR. DNR means do not resuscitate. Even if I'm dying, doctor, please don't pound my chest. Don't hit my chest, blows so that my heart gets revived. Don't put the machine, don't put the injections, this DNR. Do not revive me again. Let me die. And remembering Krishna. Right? So we will all have to go through this phase. We will have to probably come to a time where we'll have to abstain and really go on the platform of Aham Brahmasmi. That I'm not this body, therefore I do not need food and water anymore, because this body is not anymore serviceable. It is not going to be revived again. This body is going through its natural, because Prabhupada taught us this, right? Prabhupada taught us the art of living, and our beloved Fundacharya taught us the art of dying as well, right? When Prabhupada was in this state, see, Prabhupada was a great soul, Mahabhagavat Vaishnava from the spiritual world, but he did not show, at least Krishna did not show in his body, anything supernatural at the time of his departure. It's not that suddenly he became a mystic and he started overcoming all his physical problems and doing something fantastic. Prabhupada was allowed to go through a regular, physical decay. But what was spectacular about Prabhupada is that in spite of unimaginable physical decay of his body, where he became just skin and bones, Prabhupada was allowed by Krishna's grace to keep an absolutely powerfully vitalized consciousness. Right? So that was the miracle part of what he wasn't showing mystic yoga, this thing, because devotees in any case do not want to exhibit mysticism at all, because they're taking it as inferior. But Prabhupada was allowed to show something which was remarkable, that without food or water in his body for several days, and if you had done his blood test at that time, it would be all sodium, potassium, chloride and magnesium would be all like haywire. There would be no completely electrolyte imbalance in his body, because all this is required for keeping the brain intact. The moment the sodium goes down, less than 135 milliequivalents per liter, then your brain stops functioning, and at 120, you become drowsy, 110, you die sometimes. Right? But if you had done Prabhupada's blood test at that time, I'm sure you would have found something very, very abnormal in his blood chemistry. But Prabhupada was allowed to show that he was not dependent on physical elements to maintain his consciousness. He was not dependent on the Pancha Mahabhut at all. He had transcended the Pancha Mahabhut completely and was on the Brahmabhuta platform, when he has no hankering and he had no lamentation, but fully absorbed in Krishna. So Prabhupada was allowed to speak by Krishna's grace on Srimad Bhagavatam, right, with complete deliberate starvation and dehydration of his body. Right? It's a beautiful example. And that's what we're supposed to do today also, as a practice. We're supposed to allow our minds to really go deep into our chanting, and our reading, and our deep appreciation for what actually we have got. Right? So these are some beautiful lessons which we can learn from the Pandava story about thirst, getting rid of wickedness, right? By no fault finding, getting overcoming our pride, which is a very, very base quality. It destroys many merits of Krishna consciousness, and remembering also at the same time that, as Prabhupada said, do not think this will not happen to you. Prabhupada was very, very, as an acharya, he was very much, very prompt to inform his followers, descendants down the line, that do not think that, you know, because you're a devotee, this will not happen to you. It will happen to you as well. What I'm going through, what you are seeing in me, will happen to you also. So be prepared. So, while we are young, we don't think of these things, right? Most of us think, well, this is like going to happen much, you know, I mean, I think I'm 50 years away from this now. But who knows? Not who really knows? Time and again, we see in this world untimely death coming in. Right? So, we need to be conscious of the fact that people around are dying, and Arvind Mafatlal, this great, very saintly entrepreneur of our country, very illustrious personality, said something very beautiful, which he were the guidelines of his own life, because he was a very deep Ram Bhakta. I learned many things from his Guru Maharaj, Ranchor Das Ji. And he said, two things you should always remember, two things you should always forget. This is very nice. We have this simple things to always keep in mind. Two things. Two things always remember, two things always forget. What you should always remember? I said, always remember Krishna and always remember death. Never forget Krishna and never forget death. Right? You should never forget. This is Mrityu Loka. We do not know. This may be the last round we could chant. This is the last service we are doing before we die. Right? Who knows? We have been told so many times, padam, padam, yat, vipadam, nate, sham. How many times we have heard that? Right? And still we walk down the road as if nothing will happen. We get into a car as if nothing will happen. Vishwaroop Prabhu, other day, some of you may know, he was going to Pune, right? Along with his family for some service. And then his tire burst. His tire burst at 12 o'clock in the afternoon on the Pune highway, and it just burst, and the car started colliding and just somersaulted and like that. Of course, Mare Krishna Rakhe Ke, he was saved along with his wife, his wonderful baby, a servant. They all were saved. Car was smashed beyond recognition. But they were saved. But these are all reminders. You're driving to Pune, you're not expecting the car to burst. how many of us travel by vehicles? We travel by vehicles all the time. But in the summer, any tire can burst. Dhup. And when tire bursts, what happens? It's not a small burst. Tire burst means it's a big thing. Your car goes out of control and you can just bang into things, bang into people, bang on the road. You're going to complete mess your life. It could be the last time you. So like that, we are again reminded, dear friends, that we can never take Krishna consciousness cheap. Janyavas Prabhu tells this very nicely. Two things Mr. Mafalal would also tell. Two things you should always forget. Two things remember. Always remember Krishna and always remember death, right? So that helps us to, when we chant, if we remember death at the time of chanting, it will probably help us, right? My dear Lord, I do not know how much time I have in this world to chant your holy names, right? But while I'm having breath in my lungs, I have still some sense in my brain, let me chant your name effectively, in a mood to call you. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, 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 Hare. How wonderful. How wonderful that every time we are able to chant God's names, Krishna's names, how the greatest blessings are upon us. the greatest blessings are not a big promotion or a big lottery or, you know, getting 12th, getting some 98% in 10th standard. These are absolutely insignificant blessings. The world has made them look very big. Oh, he got 98% in 10th standard. It's like he's practically flying the sky, you know. So it's this like, it's the greatest achievement. Doesn't make any sense the way the world is promoting, you know, these things as glorious. But if somebody can chant God's names, simply sit in one place and just remember Krishna, it's such a blessing, such an act of devotion. It is so pleasing to Krishna. It's watering the root of the creation. Just holding our bead bags, we are watering the root of this entire creation. How wonderful is that? And when we are watering the root of creation, since we are the leaf on that same tree of creation, we are getting nourished and vitalized also. Right? So while we can chant, let's chant. And the two things he said we should always forget. Someone who has hurt you, and something good you have done to others, always forget. Because it is painful. These two things are very painful to the heart. Right? You did something good to someone and he didn't reciprocate. What happens? He didn't say thank you. He didn't reciprocate. And you needed him. You were not there. He forgot. It happens so many times in this world. Right? Now, how many times we had this experience, all of us, that we did good to somebody? It's a friend, a neighbor, fellow, you know, family member, whatever. We did something good and it didn't come back. Because the lack of gratitude is the way of the world. People are very ungrateful these days. But does it mean we should stop doing good? The answer is no. But so when you do good, it is best that you forget you did good to him. Because if you're going to remember, I had done this good for you, Prabhu, do you remember? I had done this good for you. So when you meet him next time, as he's waiting for the next opportunity when he will do good to you, you want to forget it. I did good and you forget it. Krishna allowed me to do some good to this person. I was useful to him. I am grateful. I am grateful that I had a chance to serve him. Right? If I harbor this reciprocative, fruitive, vanic mentality that he is supposed to give it back to me, and if it doesn't come back, if it doesn't come back to me, I am going to carry the pain of having helped him. Imagine, we did something good and we are pained because it has not come back to me still. I am waiting when I will come back to me. So it is a very undesirable type of consciousness to have. So you do good to somebody, just forget it. And just be happy that you are allowed to do that good to him. And on the other hand, when somebody does bad to you, again it is painful. Correct? Someone does bad to you, someone speaks back to you. This great wise man said, forget it. Forget it. Don't allow it to come. These are simple things, but they are profound spiritual realizations of a wise man. And they have lived in this world this way. And we people who are practicing bhaktas can also learn so much from these simple things. Remember Krishna, remember death. That makes us very sober. That won't make us go into this hoarding mentality. You know, I want more, more money, and more money, and more money. If you just remember death, it's very sobering to remember that, because that, hey, why am I doing all this? I'm trying to amass the whole world. You can see it's such a crazy place. People are so much greedy for more. Right? But they were to simply remember that, hey Baba, come on, I'm going to die. And that I'm not going to be very far. Right? Then why am I just going so crazy over getting so much? What do I really need actually in my life? Most of us people have enough already. I mean, I think most of us have enough. And what we're doing is just extra, extra, extra. So, of course, if Krishna gives you more, then take it and give it back to Krishna. Give it back to Krishna's devotees. So, we can allow our minds to today to feast on these virtues. The feasting part is actually to allow ourselves to feast on these beautiful thoughts which the spiritual master gives us. That is true feasting. When you hear a nice lecture of a great soul, from our spiritual masters, from our favorite speakers, what happens? We just get so... I'll end with this pastime. This is nice. Radhana Swami was speaking, and I mean, all of us, including myself, we just feel that, what a lecture, a masterpiece, a classic. And at one particular day, I don't know which year it was, but I just heard this and lecture, and I get so overwhelmed by this lecture. I just so felt completely overwhelmed by this, the beauty, the profundity of the thought process, and the depth of the realization coming out like a fountainhead from his lotus mouth. And I was so much impressed, so much enlivened, so deeply inspired, I ran into his room. I said, Maharaj, today was such a beautiful lecture you gave. How did you say all this? Those are days when Maharaj was far more available, of course. I can't imagine doing that now. So those are days where he was available. His room was open. He said, Maharaj, you're so nice. How did you do this? I'm just so happy. So I was just explaining and expressing, more expressing than when speaking, that I'm so joyful to hear your lecture. I don't remember any of the lecture right now. So which was that lecture? I don't remember anything of that lecture. But it was I remember the experience of the lecture. I don't remember the content of the lecture. So the experience was very beautiful. So I said, how did you do this? I said, Maharaj, how is it that you actually drive home this point? There wants to be the servant of the servant of the servant in every lecture of yours. And I said, I have read Prabhupada's books also. It's the same books that you read, it's the books I read also. And I don't find Prabhupada saying this on every page. He says that like far in between, he may say, become a servant of the servant. Yeah? But you seem to be drawing this conclusion from every lecture, that the most wonderful thing in life is to become the servant of the servant of the servant. How do you read in between the lines, Maharaj? I asked him. Do you read between the lines? So Maharaj said, no. Is there in every page of Prabhupada? You want to see? He just got up. He said, get that. I don't know whether he got up or I got up, but he took up the exact volume of Madhya Leela. Madhya Leela, I think it was volume 2. It is our Rath Yatra. Krishna, Mahaprabhu Chaitanya dancing in the Rath Yatra festival. And you know the story, right? In the story, Maharaj opened the exact page just immediately. He just opened it. I don't know how he did it, it was mystical. It was the exact page and says, see, it's there. And this is the pastime where Pratapada Maharaj actually goes to massage Krishna's, Mahaprabhu's body at Balagandhi. And he's massaging Mahaprabhu's feet, and the Mahaprabhu is so happy. Yeah? And he sings the Gopi Gita for his pleasure. And then he says, Bhurida, Bhurida, you are such a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful welfare worker. How did you? You are going to be so much joy today to my heart. He said, who are you? Who are you? I have never got such nectar from anybody else. Who are you? And he folds his hands humbly, this king, and says, my dear Lord, I am the servant of the servant of your servants. And it is my desire that you accept me as a servant of the servant of your servants. And he says this, Sasi Dwarkadish, it is there. Is there in every page? So, this is what we want to really, the goal of our life. Through all our fasting, through all our spiritual practices, through all our yatras, through all the good things we are doing in Krishna Bhakti, what is the goal? What is the goal of all this? Yes, we can say Krishna Prema, but much before Krishna Prema can even dawn in the horizon of our consciousness, we'll have to cultivate this mood, this attitude, this bhava. But the sun of Krishna consciousness cannot arise in the horizon of our heart unless the heart is nurtured with this most profound virtue of learning the beauty, learning the wisdom and the essentiality of serving Krishna's devotees in a humble state of consciousness. Only when we learn to do that, is Krishna's grace going to shower on our dry heart, which is like a desert right now. At one place it is said that you do anything in Krishna consciousness, like we tell the materialist, right? Prabhupada tethered to the materialist, that all the materialists have is big zeros. If they have Krishna in front of that zeros, it is very valuable, right? We heard this from Prabhupada, that everything materialist does, he has money, he has fame, he has this, he has that, he has so much, so blah, blah, blah. All this is big zero, because the time of death is all zero. But if he has one, that Krishna becomes so much valuable. So also it is said, in the same way, that all that we do in Krishna bhakti is in Krishna bhakti. Now this is very challenging to our consciousness. Everything doing Krishna bhakti is a big zero. Now that's very sad to hear that. Right? Everything doing Krishna bhakti is a big zero. Unless you have this one priceless attitude in front of it. This is the power of this consciousness. That everything we do in Krishna consciousness gains immense value. But everything is potentially very valuable. Chanting God's name, it can eradicate millions of sins. And everything we do, Ekadashi, you know, all the benefits of Ekadashi are there. And how much we deity worship, so many. Everything we do is hearing a Bhagavatam class or reading big scripture or taking a dip in the Radha Kund or whatever. And all these things are so profoundly spiritual. They're not karmakandi, just punya activities. Just give us some piety, go to the heavenly planets and enjoy with the apsaras. No. Right? They actually profoundly give us spiritual merits. And yet, they can potentially become zero if we do not cultivate this one in front of it. And that's, while we're having our zeros becoming ready, and we want to have a million zeros also, of course, we want to gather as many zeros as possible, and yet we want to not want to forget to put that one always. That one is what? That I'm the servant of Krishna's devotees. With that one in place, then we add the first zero, the second zero, and a million zeros, then it becomes extremely valuable. So let us never keep that one away. But that one is what gives value to all that we do in the realm of Krishna consciousness. Right? So there are some thoughts on this nice day of Pandav Nirjal Ekadashi. So we can allow our hearts and minds to feast on the beautiful thoughts of Srimad Bhagavatam, all that we have heard, chant around nicely, and appreciate the gifts that Prabhupada has given us so benevolently. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.